Welcome to Hey You Geeks. I'm Tony Nunes.
And I'm Rick Rebello, and this week we will be talking about Ernest Cline, both Ready Player One and his new book, Armada. So, Tony, let's talk a little bit Ready Player One, some fascinating news coming out this week about Steven Spielberg going after somebody we know and love to be in the movie. What do you think about Gene Wilder?
It's crazy. It's such a big rumor because Gene Wilder's in retirement right now.
Yes.
And
he's been in retirement for a long time.
A very long time. And the thing is, I could totally see him playing that role, and I love Gene Wilder. But yeah. I got to be honest, there's part of me that doesn't want him to cast Gene Wilder, because reading Ready Player One, and we can get into some of the dynamics of this a little more in depth in a minute, but reading Ready Player One, the biggest comparison I have to any other media is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. The story of Ready Player One and Willy Wonka are very, very similar. They're both kind of golden ticket stories, and about
it's very, very derivative.
So in that respect, I don't want to see Gene Wilder play the part in Ready Player One because it is so derivative. I think it's way too on the nose. Exactly.
The other problem I have with it is James Halliday is supposed to be a character who was young in the 1980s. And Gene Wilder was in his 50s in the 1980s.
Yeah, that's true.
It just he's 82 years old. So it makes no sense unless they change the character of James Halliday and have him be like maybe Nolan Bushnell, you know, the inventor of Atari, and that goes back to the late 60s, early 70s, which makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, but you know what? I think it would make sense, because you have to remember that the plot and the timeline for Ready Player One is, it's not present day. You know, it is the future. So the gap between the 80s and that future in Ready Player One, you know, it might work in that regard.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I agree.
But I don't know. I just think, you know, going back to the derivative thing, it's just way too on the nose. I really have a problem with that, because it's essentially Gene Wilder playing Willy Wonka again in kind of a more modern telling of the Willy Wonka story, and that I don't want to see that.
Well, I mean, but Halliday, I mean, you know, think about the book. You don't really see Halliday much.
No.
You know, Halliday is very, you know, here and there, which kind of works, you know, for 82. I mean, you're only going to get to see him in little bits and pieces. Now, the other thing that they might do is whether or not, you know, they're going to do the CGI making him look young to do Halliday at different times in his life, a la Michael Douglas in Ant-Man.
Yep.
Or Arnold Schwarzenegger in Terminator Genesis. You know, they seem to be pretty high on this digital youth thing. And I mean, so far, I mean, Douglas and Schwarzenegger, they look pretty good.
And Jeff Bridges, you know, in Tron Legacy
Jeff Bridges
as well.
And Tron, yeah, yeah. I mean, not that I advocate that, you know, forever. It sounds a lot more like the movie we saw last year with Robin Wright.
Yeah.
But
yes.
It has. It's starting to feel that way.
It is a lot like that. I don't know. If you look at a movie like Benjamin Button, for example, where it's about reverse aging, they do all of that prosthetic makeup for old age perfectly. The young age stuff, it looks okay, but it still has some of the uncanny valley characteristics. I still can't fully see beyond that CGI in that respect yet. So I think like Benjamin Button worked well doing the old age stuff. And it's easier, even if Benjamin Button didn't do the CGI thing and did prosthetics, it would be easier to do older rather than younger. So if they are going to go that route, I could see that working, but it's going to be few and far between.
I mean, the thing is, too, is we are dealing with Spielberg, so you know that whatever CGI or effects will be the best that's offered out there, you know.
Yeah.
Granted, Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, excluding that, you know what I mean?
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. Did you see the video this week about CGI not being as bad as people think? It was kind of widely, it was like a widely circulated video, and I can't remember who did it. If I find it, I will post it in the write-up to go along with the podcast on Geek Dad. But it was about, you know, how CGI isn't really that terrible in mass, you know, because most of the time, good CGI, which is all over the place, you don't even notice the CGI. Right. So we kind of overlook that, and we're kind of too quick to judge CGI as being this generally bad thing, but we're just judging it based on the bad CGI.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is, there's always been that argument. You know, there's always been the argument between, you know, Lord of the Rings CGI and Star Wars prequel CGI.
Yeah.
You know, Lord of the Rings CGI was just enough CGI to make you think that there was no CGI or very good CGI. Whereas I rewatched the prequels this weekend, holy smoke! I mean, it just screams at you. I mean, it is loud and proud, you know. But I think if he's going to play Halliday, it's going to be very subtle. I'm torn by this because I'm not sure it's the right role. But I have, it's hard to say this about any actor, but I have like a love for Gene Wilde, and what I mean by love, it's like, I have such a warm memories of his characters, you know, almost all of his characters, really, especially Willy Wonka, you know, because for a kid watching that movie, it's magical, you know, it's a magical movie, even though it's 40-something years old, you know, and, you know, whether he's Frankenstein or in Blazing Saddles, but he quit under very sad circumstances, you know, the death of his wife, and he said he would only work with two people. He said he would either work for Mel Brooks or Steven Spielberg. And he probably never expected that phone to ring. But I guess this week the phone rang.
It did.
You know?
I mean, potentially.
Potentially. So I think that for people our age, and I'm sure Ernest Cline's probably feeling this in his heart, that if you have this movie and you see this thing, this great thing about, you know, nostalgia for that time period, and you cap it off with Gene Wilder walking in, you're going to have people crying. You know what I mean? It's like, he's been gone for so long that the idea, like, that to see him would almost be magical.
It would mean nothing
for the kids. Yeah.
Yeah. And in some ways it's fitting, because, you know, the big irony to me, is that Spielberg is directing this movie because, you know, Ready Player One is so full of pop culture references, especially 80s pop culture references. And almost every Steven Spielberg movie is referenced in this. And he does the same thing in Armada. But the fact that Spielberg is directing this movie that is so, is based on a book that's so built up around the lore that Spielberg himself created. It's crazy. Nothing's happened like this that I can remember.
The amazing thing about it too is I think Spielberg is the only person that could go to all these different companies.
He is.
All these different things and say, listen, I need this thing in my movie. And they'll say yes.
Yeah. That means
I'll cut you a check. But it's not going to be what you think it's going to be because I need 100 of these things. You know?
Yeah, there's no precedent for this.
No,
but I'm really excited to see how it all plays out because if you know, every studio and every media company is represented in this book, and you know, they're all competitors in the end, and the people doing this movie, the three companies that are putting it together, are going to have to go after tons of different people. That's a huge task.
Yeah, this whole book is an enormous task. I mean, it is. I mean, just the scope of it, you know, the battles. When you think of the battles in this book, you know, giant kaiju battles, you know, there's a lot going on.
There's a ton going on.
And it's going to be hard to, you know, it's good that Spielberg, because I look at him as a book that's impossible to make. A great book, a book I love to read. And I'll tell you one thing, Tony, I can't tell you how many, I assigned Ready Player One to my students this last year, and I can't tell you how many students came up to me and they said, listen, I don't read. I hate reading. but I love this book. Thank you for introducing me to this.
Well, that's the magic of this book. You know, yeah. we had a discussion on, we have kind of an internal Geek Dad message board, and we were discussing Ready Player One to some degrees based off of the news. And there's a release date now, which is December 2017 for the movie as well. But that got us to talking about the book itself. And, you know, the book is not well written. And this, you know, it's not literature. There's two kinds of books. There's great literature, which you know, very timeless and very poetically written. But then there's pop culture books, like pop books. They're almost like the popcorn. They're what popcorn movies are to books.
You know, Fifty Shades of Grey, Twilight. You know,
yeah.
Those, you know,
they're easy reads.
You know, as much as it'll offend a lot of nerds out there, this is kind of that targeted at nerds.
It absolutely is. And you know, I can see how that would offend people, but it is. And there's, you know, there's a bigger place for that too.
For adolescents, though, I'm telling you, because I see them. Like I said, I got students coming up to me that this book really strikes a chord with them. You know. And I think it strikes that chord of that, you know, that kid who's not gorgeous, who, you know, stays at home, plays video games with other people, go to the prom. You know what I mean? That it really gets to that disenfranchised adolescent out there.
Exactly. And what you're saying, I think a lot of people forget, because I think a lot of people write this book's popularity off as being, you know, people love it because it's so nostalgic. Yeah. Nostalgia is a huge part of it. It's at the heart of it, but the characters and the world that are created here, though simple, though they follow the hero's journey, they are at the heart of nerd culture, and I do agree completely with what you just said.
No, my answer to them is, listen, you know, get 100 young people to read this book who would not read normally. They can read, but they choose not to.
Yeah.
And see their reaction to it and how it affects them, you know, on a very deep level. You know, I think they discount that. And it's easy to discount that because, yeah, it is nostalgia pornography. I mean, it's nostalgia pornography.
It is.
He goes way too over the top, I think.
At times he goes a little overboard. He shoehorns the stuff in a little tight.
Right. Well, even, you know, kind of segueing into Armada. You know, going into Armada, I'm enjoying Armada, but it's starting to feel a little old, the nostalgia stuff.
Yeah.
It's starting to feel, because it's just very heavy-handed, you know. And Armada borrows as much from The Last Starfighter as Ready Player One borrows from Willy Wonka.
But at the same time, ironically, referencing to The Last Starfighter throughout, Ready Player One did reference to Willy Wonka throughout, but this is referencing The Last Starfighter, so... I don't know. Yeah. I am enjoying Armada. It's a fun read, but I'm not. I can't say I'm enjoying it even half as much as I enjoyed Ready Player One.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, it's still a fun read. I'm still enjoying it. It's just, you know, it's not matching up to those expectations. And did you read news today that his next book, he got a 7-figure deal for his next book?
Yeah, I can understand that.
I can understand too. It's huge money, but but then the nostalgia stuff, the references, the movie references, and things like that in Armada, they're feeling more disingenuous.
Yeah, forced. Yeah,
they're definitely forced, because Ready Player One, the world that they've created is kind of based around that pop culture. Here, it's just the world's not built around that. It's definitely forced.
I mean, you kind of understand it because the main character's father dies before the character is born. So the reason for the nostalgia is that he wants to better understand and learn about his father and his father's life. And I'll give Klein credit. That's a really good reason for it. You know, at least he sets up a reason why this, a very viable reason, I think, why this person would do this. Because if I had lost my dad, you know, before I got to know him, what would I have to learn about him? You know, I would learn from what he left, his papers, his writings, his, you know, these different things. And that's what, you know, that's the way Armada sent it. You
It is.
It just starts to feel like I've heard this before.
Well, there's lines of dialogue with the main character's friends talking and debating, things like about Thor and stuff like that. And those conversations just they don't have their place. So it immediately kind of takes you out of the book. Whereas Ready Player One didn't do that, because everything character builds. You know,
I think a lot of people have a lot of false assumption about geeks. Like, we don't really sit around and talk about whether Mjolnir is more powerful than Excalibur. We might sit there and go, hey, did you read the new Thor? It was a pretty good book. Yeah, did you like the story? But we're not sitting there going, oh, well, you know, Warp Factor 8 is not the same as Hyperspace 9. It's like, that's crap that people think we say that. And it's not true.
It's the same thing with this podcast. I mean, Hey You Geeks is all about dissecting geek culture, but we're not just dissecting it in that way. You know, we're not.
Yeah.
We do lots of speculating and stuff like that, but we're not. Yeah. You know, we're not nerding out over finite details about these worlds.
I could sit there and go, well, I kind of like Ben Affleck's suit. It kind of looks like the Dark Knight suit. But they think, like, you know, they think we're sitting around going, you know, the Bat and the Batman suits, the derivative of issue number 5. Number 2. It's like, come on, man. Nobody does that.
No one does that.
Nobody knows what number episode of friggin' Star Trek. You know, I could tell you that there was an episode called A Space Scene with Khan. I don't know what number it is.
You know, there are a few people who probably do, but that's right. Such a minority.
But that's the fringes. That's the fringes.
So yeah, so it just bothers me a little bit.
It does, me too. You know, I'm the biggest Doctor Who fan in the world, and I could say, oh, I love this series or this, you know, storyline, but I couldn't say transmitted in 1974, April 2nd. You know, come on now.
No.
Who does that crap?
And you know, we're doing a spin-off podcast that we're about to launch all about Star Wars, and you know, don't expect us to you know, debate the weather on Tatooine and things like that, or the make of, you know,
we're just going to spend, we have zero fucks on how moisture evaporators actually work on Tatooine, all right?
No. We don't care.
You can enjoy an orchestra and not worry about what type of strings are on the violin.
Yeah, exactly. You know? I mean, we're not, you know, that level of obsession is reserved for the Hannibal Lecters of the world and, you know, the sociopaths. So we'll stay away from that.
Right. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, getting back to Armada, you know, it's good. It's a good read. You know, obviously, if you like the stuff that we like, and if you like Last Starfighter, obviously, why not? You know, maybe just want to watch Last Starfighter. You know, they always say the wrong thing to do in media is to have people want to stop what you're giving them and go look at the thing you just told them to look at. I think that's one of the mistakes that Klein makes, because I get through Armada and I'm sitting there going, I really just want to go watch Last Starfighter.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know,
which, if you haven't watched The Last Starfighter, by God, please go watch that movie.
Yeah, do it. But you know what? Reading Ready Player One, what I did, like, I used to read that book when I first read it. I would take a lot of notes, because there was a lot of references I didn't understand off the bat. There were some things that I hadn't been exposed to. So the fun of that book for me was exploring new facets of geek culture I hadn't yet explored. So that was fun to me. I used to do a lot after research.
I think I'm the exact same age as Ernest Cline. So like everything in that book, I just kind of kept nodding my head going, yep.
Yeah, see, I was like 80%. 80% of the stuff I was nodding my head. 20% I had to do a little research. You know, like some of the kaiju stuff. Or the, you know, the what's the Spider-Man robot, Spider-Wan, or you know what I'm talking about?
Ultraman? No.
No. There's it's Spider something. I can't remember, but stuff like that I'd never heard of, and it exposed me to it.
What you missed out was what it was in the early to mid 80s at a local UHF station here. They used to have something called Creature Double Feature, And Creature Double Feature always either had two Universal horror movies or two kaiju movies. So we watched, you know, 4 hours of kaiju almost every Saturday when I grew up. So we had a really deep... And then during the weekday, there used to be something called Dialing for Dollars, which was a movie they would play on CBS, local CBS, between 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock. So that would be that movie that you watched when you got home and you were doing your homework and mom was making dinner. And they would either play Hammer horror movies or kaiju movies. So that's why we got so versed in those.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I think a lot of people share that. I was too young for that. But you know, but I love that. I love.
Yeah, but even that. Like when he was giving the shout out to the TSR module, the Dungeons and Dragons module, I was like, I know exactly what module he's talking about.
Yeah,
and I'm like, I played that module.
But imagine all of the younger people, like your students that you were talking about, that,
you know,
that
have but read it. The funny thing though is, in spite of that, they were 1,000% on board.
But they probably looked a lot of it up too. I mean, they probably explored a lot of new. You know, things about geek culture they hadn't even known about before that.
What I would do in classes is I would put up the stuff on the screen.
Okay.
So, for instance, with the video game, getting the key in... what was the name of the video game? My mind just blanked. When they had to get the secret level, I put up the level so they could see it on TV and see the guy's name come up, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
What was the game? My mind just went blank. I'm going to get beat up on the comments on this. But anyway, so I kind of walked them through it. I showed them all the references. You know, I brought in an Atari 2600 for people who hadn't seen what 2600 was. You know, I brought in the TSR manual to show them, you know, how cheap D&D manuals looked in 1982, you know.
Yeah.
I remember the good old days where you'd wait till they went on clearance at... KB Toys, which no longer exists, and you can get them for $2. You know, that was the big thing.
Well, much like a book like Console Wars, you know, Ready Player One is as much an archive of kind of the 80s, especially the 80s, late 70s into the early 90s, I would say. You know, it's kind of an archive of pop culture.
Yeah, and I think Console Wars, to me, is like a running commentary of that period.
Yeah,
whereas you got to find out what the hell was going on.
Yeah, it's a fascinating read.
Yeah.
So Ernest Cline, just to create a false segue here, also wrote a movie about pilgrimage to see the first Star Wars prequel, Episode One. Did you see that movie?
Yes, I did. Yeah. You know, it's so funny. I rewatched the prequels this weekend, and I had not seen them since I saw them in the theater. And I was the first person in line, believe it or not, at the Harbor Mall Cinema to see the original prequel. And boy, oh boy, those movies have aged horribly. And I think that's one of the things that Ernest Cline was looking at, too, with that.
Yeah. So, I don't remember how that movie ended, but I don't think it ended with pessimism, whereas it probably should have. It probably would have been a lot more hilarious if it ended that way. But I think it ended with the characters just kind of being happy to have seen the movie and feeling as part of it, you know.
Here's the thing. It's like, you know, when I saw it, you know, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, yeah, I really enjoyed it. And it wasn't until I saw it the second time that, so I was like, there's something kind of sucks about this.
Yeah.
You know? It took a little while for it to kind of sink in.
That's exactly what, I mean, I ordered the posters on HGTV. I mean, this was still early days of the internet and stuff like that. So
yeah, yeah.
I remember watching HGTV, not HGTV. The Home Shopping Network, whatever that channel is called. Yeah, so I remember watching it because they were giving away the Episode One poster and the soundtrack and all of that. This is all pre-movie. I'm actually looking at the Episode One pin. I still have it. in my office, and I was so excited. You know, I got all of it, special edition poster with the watermark and yada yada yada. I was buying the Pepsi cases because the Pepsi cans had characters.
I remember too that, like, you know, everybody, I think Taco Bell was having a deal where they had the cups.
Yeah, and that was your first look of the characters back then, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this is before the internet was what it is today. So to get these first looks of these new characters, you had to buy a case of Pepsi. Yeah. And my wife, she wasn't my wife at the time, but we were dating, used to make fun of me because I had this stack of Pepsi cans on display in my bedroom. Right. But then the movie came out, and just, you know, just like fanboys, the Ernest Klein movie that we're talking about is Fanboys, because I couldn't remember the name of it either. But, I mean, I was just like those guys. I wasn't the first in line like you, but I definitely saw it the first week that it came out, and what a disappointment.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So where we're going with this segue is...
we're going to talk about a new trilogy that should be much better.
Exactly. We're talking about a hopeful future here. And, you know, as we've mentioned before, we have a new podcast. You know, Hey You Geeks isn't going anywhere, but we're going to do a monthly podcast, which we were going to launch last month, but we're now launching at the end of this month. And it's called Dadawan. It's a Star Wars podcast where we talk about Star Wars because there's so much news coming out. And we're going to try to have guests on every month and everything like that.
And we've already proven that we could do an hour of Star Wars every episode.
Every episode we can. So it's going to be easy. But
that was before they had a movie, new movie coming out.
Exactly. But before we launched, you know, that podcast, some big news came out today. You know, is it big news? I don't know. I guess it's big news. I think everything about the actual Force Awakens movie, you know, we're just eating this stuff up at this point because we're so excited because we want to wash that foul smell of the prequels off.
Yeah, we're desperate.
We're definitely desperate. But Entertainment Weekly, their fall movie preview issue just came out. And I always loved the fall movie preview of Entertainment Weekly. But this time they have a whole cover story on The Force Awakens, and they dropped some pretty interesting insights from their interviews with J.J. Abrams and Lawrence Kasdan. So we're going to talk about some of those, especially regarding the villain. Is he the villain? I guess he's the villain. We don't know that for sure.
It's all indications so far is that he's the villain. Yeah,
and that's Kylo Ren, and that's Adam Driver's character,
which is interesting because one of the things that people have found out is that yes, they're calling him Kylo Ren, but that's not necessarily the character's name.
Yes, they're not saying his real name. Kylo Ren actually comes from it's a name he was given because he was part of a group called the Knights of Ren. This is all according to these interviews. We don't know his name, so his last name very well could be Skywalker or Solo, which goes back to what we've been talking about since day one on this podcast. You know, that whole lineage of the Solo Skywalker kids and how that could be awesomely played into this new series. Yeah, we don't know the last names of Finn and Rey, the two main characters either. Pretty sure that Finn is not a Skywalker or a Solo, but Rey.
I don't know about yeah.
Well, Rey is. Mm-hmm. I mean, Rey. I feel like Rey must be because there's clips of her with Carrie Fisher and.
Right.
Who knows? It's all speculation at this point, but
well, there's pictures of her in the Millennium Falcon sitting next to Han Solo.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, Finn, we don't know. Rey, we're pretty good. I mean, maybe Finn is Lando Calrissian's son.
He could. Yeah, you never know.
Which would be kind of funny, kind of fun and funny and ironic, I think, you know, especially if he's flying the Millennium Falcon. So.
Especially if Lando's son like. Ended up in a romantic entanglement with Han's daughter.
That would be very...
Can you imagine how that would play out? Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. And also, you know, speaking of Han Solo, another drop in this Entertainment Weekly story is that Han Solo is considered a main character in this, and Luke and Leia,
yeah.
It hasn't been said if they are or not. So just the fact that Han Solo is playing a more major part in this, that's mm-hmm. awesome to me, because I wasn't
that
sure.
That surprised the hell out of me.
Yeah. I thought they'd be like background players.
Yeah, because I really thought Harrison Ford wasn't into being in this movie.
No, he's decried his Star Wars fans who followed him around.
Well, I mean, and also that has to do with, you know, there's a lot of talk about how bad the relationship was with him and Lucas, you know, during the original shooting of the original film. So, I mean, it might have something to do with that, but
yeah.
You know, either way. You know, it's. I'm excited to hear he plays a major role in it, because I've said to everybody who would listen to me that the one thing that was missing from the prequels was that character, not yes. Han Solo specifically, but that type of character.
Well, another thing about the prequels, and this is something I was thinking about reading this news about Kylo Ren, which I'll get to in a second. The prequels, you had Darth Maul, who was a cool character.
Right.
Really not developed in the way that nope. Darth Vader is. He's not like all of the characters in the prequels. He's really not developed much at all. But he's a cool villain nonetheless, and that's something the Star Wars films always need.
I don't want to go on a rant about this, because I could go on this for hours. But the one thing about the prequels, like I said, I rewatched it this weekend. They had all these great villains that they just disposed of. In lieu of a bunch of boring nonsense, you know, they dispose of Darth Maul. I don't know why. Why couldn't he have gotten away? Would it have been more compelling if Darth Maul had gotten away and Obi-Wan chased him for three movies? I think so. Right?
Well, the thing about the prequels is that it's sad when an animated series has more character development and
right.
does more for these characters than these three movies yeah. that George Lucas himself put out.
The thing is, by the time you get to episode 3, right, Obi-Wan has this giant fight with General Grievous, who wasn't even in the first two movies. And then supposedly he's the badass leader of the droid army, and you're like, is he?
Yeah.
Where'd he come from? And there's yep. no explanation. Like, he's sick and he's coughing, and also it's like, why is he sick? I don't know. He has this fight with Obi-Wan, and you're like, I don't give a shit.
No, it's all about yeah. looking cool. You know, the character right. looks cool, so we're yeah. good.
But if he had that battle in the third movie with Darth Maul, who he'd been chasing for three movies, that would have had some meaning.
It would.
You know, you killed my master, you know? But no.
Well, the...
You know, I have to say one thing, Tony, before we go on. There's been a lot of talk about reboots. We hate reboots and all this stuff. And listen to me, Disney. Listen to me. If you're going to reboot anything, redo the prequels. Please. Please. You want to retcon that? Retcon away. You want to do it. I mean, even J.J. Abrams said that they're already retconning the Metachlorians for these films.
Yeah, thank God.
You know? Thank God. And it's like... Get rid of all of it. Just have, you know, Kathleen Kennedy just come out and say, look, they screwed up. We're sorry. We're going to redo this. We're going to fix this. We're going to make this right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Star Wars fans would pay money to see that. You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my rant.
It's never going to happen.
So. I know.
They would never spend the money.
Can't they just say it's a George Lucas remastered edition and just recast everybody?
It would be nice, but you know what?
God.
At this point, we all just have to move on and look at the future and just pretend they never happened, because, you know, let's just start with a new hope.
Yeah, but they're there. Yeah, let's do that. All right,
let's
go.
Start with a new hope.
Yeah.
So Kylo Ren, let's talk about Kylo Ren, because Lawrence Kasdan says that this is a character unlike anything he's written for the Star Wars universe before. He's a very emotional character, full of all kinds of emotions, which again, to me, indicates that he's potentially a Solo, or as you know, a Skywalker Solo, because writing a character that's so wrought with emotions and everything, and right. obsessed with Darth Vader, like apparently he is. They say that mm-hmm. as well. He has an obsession with Anakin Skywalker and what right. came before. So all of that obsession, it's very interesting to me, because why would he be so obsessed unless perhaps Darth Vader is part of his lineage? So,
right.
you know, to me, it's really seeming like this character is related in some way or the other.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And if I were to make a guess, I would say that, you know, if Kylo Ren and the female character were brother and sister, and one was going in one direction and one was going in the other, I think that's the best way to make a compelling story, you know, from my standpoint, looking on the outside.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you'll have, you know, this family broken up by these two children going in complete opposite directions, you know. So if Kylo Ren is the grandson of Anakin Skywalker, and he thinks that his grandfather was the greatest thing since sliced bread, or was told that he was, and he just obviously goes in that direction, you know. And it makes sense from a familial standpoint. I think it makes sense from a compelling story standpoint. I could be completely wrong. You know, I might be wrong, but we'll have to see. But that would be my guess.
No, I really think you're right, because if you watch that first teaser too, just mm-hmm. everything, all of those shots, there's really no story shown, but in the shots themselves, like mm-hmm. Rey being handed Luke's original lightsaber from Leia, I would imagine, or the shot of Luke touching R2, things like that. To me, it feels like there is a family tie in there, and Luke's narration over it, you know, that about the Force, you know, I have it, my father has it, my sister has it. It's kind of creating that idea in my mind when I watch that. So reading through this news that just came out today, and these interviews in Entertainment Weekly, it just kind of reinforces it. And I you know, we've been saying this from day one, that would be the best and the basically the best way that they could move forward with a series is by introducing the kids of the main characters that we all love. And
right.
You know, it's looking more and more like that's the case.
Yeah. It would be a good fit.
We just need a real trailer now. And Disney has their D23 conference this weekend.
Yes.
So I'm guessing we may get the first actual trailer, not a teaser, but a trailer this weekend. And that would be fantastic.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I just think they're doing a good job. They're sort of slow rolling this stuff. But it is getting close. I mean, when you think about it, it's not that far away.
Nope.
You know, we're talking under 6 months now. So they got to get, I mean, of course, me and you are hoping that when we go to New York Comic Con, it's just going to be a big explosion of stuff for us. So,
yeah.
And that's what we're really hoping for, people, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's getting to that point where they really got to start giving up the goods, or at least some of the goods.
They do. And you know, there's dates coming out now about when the toys will come out. I think they've held back a lot of that information just, you know, to J.J. Abrams is huge on avoiding spoilers. You know, he created the whole mystery box concept. So I think a lot of those details have been kind of held back for a while.
It is pretty wild. You know, when you really think about it, how close we are, it is kind of wild that we have there's so many things we haven't seen or don't know.
Yeah, and for... Well, you know, if any company can do it, it's Disney.
Yeah.
So,
but when you compare it, somebody mentioned this to me earlier. When you compare it to the Batman versus Superman rollout, where they've just given everything away as much as they can away, as fast as they can, that it is pretty amazing.
Well, I think Disney excels at suppressing excitement by showing very little. You know, they're very strategic in everything they show.
Yeah.
And kind of every rollout of every product and everything, and where they're at and where they're showing this stuff, you know, what stage they're using to present this information. It's all very, very strategic.
Right.
That's why I think D23 would be a good place for them to unveil the first trailer. And
mm-hmm.
I would be willing to bet money we'll probably see it this weekend.
I hope so. I hope so.
Especially because for Disney to drop such big news in Entertainment Weekly as they did, you know, it only makes sense that they would do that a couple of days ahead of them releasing something huge themselves.
Right.
So, I hope we'll have to see. But yeah. But selfishly, like you said, I hope that New York Comic Con is full of Star Wars.
Yeah, oh, I agree. Well, you know what else? What else did come out this week was the Korean trailer.
Oh yeah,
which had a couple of extra shots in it that I thought were pretty awesome. The main shot being the one of the Imperial Army.
The first shot,
which blew me away. I just thought, even though I know that's either 100% CGI or mostly CGI, there was just something about it that just looked awesome. And I think part of it is seeing that army of stormtroopers. Whereas, you know, I'm going back to the prequels. I don't know what they thought those droids, if they thought those droids were meant to look scary. You know?
Yeah, they're like cartoon characters.
When they showed the army of droids, it was just like the army of, like, it looked like, they looked like robots that would fight Bugs Bunny. Like, they were just this silly-ass looking things. Whereas when you see those white stormtroopers, you're like, man. And they even, I think the new stormtrooper uniform even looks more sinister than the old one.
It does. And that shot is very, like, triumph of the will. I mean, it's,
yeah,
there's red. It's a snowy, you know, Alps-like landscape. It's crazy. Yeah. And, you know, it's probably something that comes more towards the end of the movie. But it's also very fitting that was the Korean trailer. All I could think of was North Korea when I saw that shot.
Yeah,
you know, well, the scale and grandeur of it. So I thought that was kind of amusing.
No, I agree. And, you know, I'm looking at another picture of it right now, and it does, it shows stormtroopers in the front and then sort of a big red Imperial banner in the back. I'm like, it really does have that triumph of the will type of thing.
It does.
That sort of Nazi time. Look, yeah.
Big time. But that's Star Wars, what
the Imperial's supposed to be, yeah.
Oh, speaking of awesome images, there's one image, because there's some new images that came out in the Entertainment Weekly as well.
Yeah.
You know, some of them are cool. They talk about Kylo Ren's lightsaber being, you know, homemade and kind of raw on purpose. But the thing that struck me the most of everything is this one shot of Ren untying BB-8 from a net.
Yeah.
BB-8 is the little round robot. It was captured by a scavenger who's on this creature who has, like, armor all over it and this big square helmet that kind of looks like the villain, the helmet from the bad guy from Silent Hill. You know, this big, long helmet. Mm-hmm. But it's such an awesome, raw-looking, like, industrial image. And I can't wait to own the action figure for that character.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, it looks like something more out of Mad Max than Star Wars.
It does.
You know.
But it's a beautiful mix of what Star Wars and Mad Max both are, you know. You know, it has that decay, but it has that decay in, like, a futuristic alien environment.
Well, that's one of the things, you know, when Star Wars is really good, like, when you look at the original New Hope, you know, the rebels and the rest of the world have this really used future look, and then the Imperial is everything just glossed to the absolute nines, you know. Everything just clean, and everything's black and white and gray and clean, and then everything else is just this dirty, you know, grungy, used universe, and that's what I think it works the best. You know, that's why I think it really works well. I mean, I'm looking at a picture of Captain Phasma, we should call her Phantasma, because that's where she got her name from.
Yeah.
You know, she's got the chrome outfit, but it's a chrome that's not even shining. It's kind of a, you know, dirty sort of chrome of the shot that I'm looking at, you know. Because that's what, you know, it looks cool. I mean, it looks like it's been used. You don't want everything to look shiny and polished.
I mean, you know, it works especially after the war. You know, this takes place so many years after, so it makes sense that this new Imperial faction, whoever they are, they're not going to have everything completely shiny. And I'm really excited about that Captain Phasma character, who in this interview, J.J. Abrams says that name came from Phantasm, which is an awesome movie because of the little
another chrome, reason to like it.
Exactly, because of the little chrome robot, the round little robots.
Spheres.
Spheres, yeah. So, I mean, that's awesome, yeah,
Phantasm is one of my favorite movies. If you've never seen it, you know, if you're listening to this, you've never seen it, you need to go. It's one of the best Halloween movies you can ever get.
It's a great movie.
And the funny thing is, it's really a story about loss between a young boy and his family and his brother, more than anything else, and that loss being the overriding fear of the whole thing. But it's interesting that J.J. Abrams, you know, when he said he saw the chrome outfit, and he was like, Phantasm, you know?
And to name a character after, I mean, that's pretty cool. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And to have Gwendolyn
Christie playing that character, too, I think is exciting. Because, you know,
she's proven her badassness.
She definitely has, and you haven't seen a female stormtrooper like that.
Yeah.
And she looks like one of the most badass characters in this movie.
Oh God, yeah. Well, the only other thing that I was laughing at, I was just reading, is you and I have talked about Miss Marvel a lot. I don't know if you've heard about this campaign where Ronda Rousey's trying to get the job. And I'm like, how could you not give it to her? I mean, is there a more badass woman on the planet to play Miss Marvel than Ronda Rousey? She's literally the toughest woman on the planet.
Yeah, except she's really controversial in her comments about women and stuff like that.
Right, right. But she is a mega geek.
I'm still sticking with, what's her name? Starbuck from Battlestar Galactica.
Katie Sackhoff.
Katie Sackhoff. That's my pick.
That's a damn good pick too. Yeah.
Well, you, speaking of Marvel, to close out the episode, I didn't see Fantastic Four, and I'm kind of thankful I didn't, reading the reviews, but you did. So I want to hear your thoughts without spoiling it for me, because God knows, I'm so excited to see this movie.
Well, in fear of, you know, obviously I'm going to catch a lot of crap for this. I liked it for the most part. I liked about 85% of it. Now, the director said, you know, going into it, that he was looking at the Fantastic Four sort of as a David Cronenberg sort of body horror movie. And when you watch it, it's very derivative of The Fly in some of its overtones and look. And I was 100% on board with that, watching it. It's a great movie, and I give Josh Trank credit. It's not, you know, if you like Fantastic Four, it's going to piss you off. It's not the Fantastic Four. It's not. You know. It just isn't.
Did you see Chronicle? Did you see Josh Trank's Chronicle?
I saw Chronicle, yeah.
I thought that was great.
And I don't know if you noticed, but Josh Landis actually put out pages of his Fantastic Four script this
morning. I did see that. Because Josh Trank, he kind of shot himself in the foot on Twitter last week. And
yeah.
They're saying that his comments may have jeopardized the film $20 million in losses, and that guy's going to have a hard time getting hired for a big movie again.
Oh, he really screwed himself.
Yeah.
He really screwed himself.
He needs a publicist.
Yeah.
Or he needs to listen to his publicist, because he made a drastic mistake this week.
I listened to him on the Kevin Smith podcast, the Batman podcast Kevin Smith does a couple weeks ago. And he seems like one of those kind of, like, I keep it real idiots.
Yeah.
You know, keeping it real. So he's a smart guy. He's screwed himself big time.
Huge.
He should have said nothing. And then when people approached him about it, what he should have said was, that movie would have failed regardless of who directed it. And I agree. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Sony knows what the hell they want from these superhero movies. I just don't think they know. And I don't think they have any trust or confidence in comic book people. I'm doing air quotes. Meaning bringing in people from Marvel to work on these things. You know.
Well, and if you're a Fantastic Four fan, I'm sorry to say, you're probably not going to see a Fantastic Four movie again in your lifetime. Because Spider-Man, which is on its third reboot now, you know, mm-hmm. Spider-Man is probably the most beloved superhero outside of Batman and Superman. Fantastic Four, people don't really care that much about them. So this failure, this being the third failed Fantastic Four movie, it's done.
Well, and the thing is, I was talking to somebody about this earlier. Fantastic Four, they're kind of on the same boat as Superman. Yes, they're legendary characters. Yes, they helped build the companies. Do they work in 2015? Absolutely not. They just don't work in this this time, right now. They don't, right? A guy with big stretchy arms, an orange block, and that doesn't work in 2015.
And a you rock can't... character with no male bits.
Right. You know what I mean? It's like, it just doesn't work. So you, no yeah, matter how you do
I don't
it,
buy that argument because
I do.
Guardians of the Galaxy worked. And that is even more far out there.
No, but my thing is this, is like, Mr. Fantastic will always look stupid.
Stretch arms.
He'll always look, you can't, there's nothing you can fix with that.
That's
nothing.
True, yeah.
Right?
I agree with that one.
Even in this movie is fucking dead serious, all right? And then once you see him do the stretch thing, you're like, pfft. You have to. It's just, it's a silly concept, you know? It's just silly.
It is.
And it's a power attached to one of the most serious characters in the Marvel Universe, you know? An important character in the Marvel Universe. But it's fucking silly.
It
you
is silly. Know? Yeah.
The whole thing with the Thing is silly. You know? He's the Hulk, but he can talk, and he's orange, and he says it's clobbering time. Right?
Yeah.
Which, the phrase, it's clobbering time, that's like getting a malted at the five and dime.
Well, does he right? say it in the movie?
No.
Because that would be like...
He says it at the end. Excuse me, he says it at the end. Yes.
See, that's like if Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight had Batman saying things like the Adam West series, you know? Yeah. There's things you need to strip for time.
Right. It just, it doesn't work. No. You know? They didn't do the uniforms. They didn't do the number four uniforms, right? The stuff they gave them didn't make sense either. The guy playing Johnny Blaze looked like he was wearing the football Under Armour shirts with the pads on them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then Reed Richards looks like he was getting launched into space. And it's just a mess. But I don't blame Josh. I understand what he was trying to do. And I would have been much happier if they just let him just have gone the whole way with it. I think Dr. Doom, I thought he actually looked good. When you watch the movie, the way he looks makes sense. And he's scary as hell. You know, he comes in and he whoops it up. And it's done well. I understand why, you know, if you're a fan of Fantastic Four and you go, it's going to piss you off because it's not, you know, it's not what you're buying.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you
know. So.
And.
But you liked it, though.
I liked it. You know, am I going to watch it, you know, 10 times? Nope. You know, am I going to watch it 5 times? Nope. I might watch it 3 times.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be on my list of favorites, but I didn't sit there and go, this is a. That never, the whole time I was watching it, at no point was I sitting there going, this is garbage. You know, I wasn't saying that at all. Whereas the Fantastic Four prior to this, I was saying that watching that thing.
Yeah, that was pretty terrible.
When Reed Richards is disco dancing and he's doing the stretchy arms, the disco dancing, that's facepalm stuff. That's
and like, Michael Chiklis in his trench coat.
Oh, my God. Well, that's what I'm saying is that the problem with these characters is that they're goofy.
Yeah.
They're just goofy. What are you going to do with that?
No, I see
you
that.
Know, it's like Superman. We're going to make him dark and brooding. Well, then it's not Superman. You know? It's like you don't have to make him goofy, but you have to be true to what it is. And if being true to what it is not going to make you money, then don't make it. There's so many characters out there that would make good movies. Why are you going to make movies with the ones that won't?
Yeah, that's something I never understood. But then again, it's because Sony owns so few that they got to do what they can to get on that superhero boom while they still own the rights.
Well, Sony proved that you can lose during this boom.
Well, you know, they made the smart move to partner up with Marvel for Spider-Man, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, well, I mean... I think that's going to go well. I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where even the last Spider-Man movie, everybody hates it. When I watched it, I was like, is it great? No. Is it as bad? My big thing is it as bad as people say? I don't think so. I don't think it's as bad as people said it was, but that's me.
Yeah.
I didn't think that the gentleman who played Spider-Man in the last two movies was that bad. I didn't think Andrew Garfield was that bad. You know, everybody acted like he was the worst thing ever. I'm like, have you seen Batman and Robin?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, it's 2 hours of George Clooney bobbing his head. You know, it's literally, watch that movie and do a shot every time George Clooney bobs his head.
I
don't know what's going
on. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just... I still think that superhero fatigue is eventual. You know, it's coming eventually, and there's so many big movies scheduled for the next, like, 5 or 6 years that these little companies... Well, they're not little companies, but these companies that own so few of the superhero rights, like Sony, you know, they're the ones who are going to ruin it for Marvel and DC. Well, that's not true. DC is ruining it for themselves.
Well, the thing with Sony is they really need to just go to Marvel and cut the same deal and go, listen, we have no idea how to do this right.
Yeah.
We obviously have proven we have no idea what the hell we're doing. So could you please, you know, they brought in Brian Michael Bendis to work on the Spider-Man franchise, the last franchise. And he said that they threw out everything he threw on the table. So who the hell is in that room looking at Brian Michael Bendis going, obviously you don't know anything about Spider-Man. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's insane.
You know, it's like, I want to build a car. I want to bring in Henry Ford. And then he starts talking. I go, you know what, Henry? Why don't you just shut the hell up?
Yeah, yeah. You know? Yeah, it's sad. It's like if they brought Dan Slott on for the next one and then just, you know, threw away his ideas. You know, the guy who wrote Star Wars the best out of in the past decade.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, that's one of the things they did right with Star Wars. You know, they brought back Larry Kasdan.
Exactly, yep.
Which is interesting. Another thing about the article is Larry Kasdan said that George Lucas did ask him to come back and he didn't want to do it for the prequels.
Yeah.
You know, which sucks because if there was one guy that those prequels needed desperately, it was Larry Kasdan.
It was, but you know what? At the end of the day, the effects still would have been what they were.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
But I still think, I think that even with the effects the way they are, if the characters were compelling, we wouldn't care.
Yeah, yep.
You know what I mean? If I'm too busy looking at a relationship between two characters, I'm not worried about what's behind them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think George Lucas became so obsessed about the sunset behind the characters that he spent no time on the two people in front of the sunset. You know?
Yeah, it's quite clear.
Just talk about sand in your crotch. Just say that. Say it. Do you love her?
Oh my God. Worst scenes ever.
Oh my God. It's the worst love affair ever put on film.
Yeah, it probably is. Oh my
God. It's embarrassingly bad.
It is.
Ugh. You know?
Well, we should end it here, you know, before we start talking more about Star Wars, because the next time you hear us talking about Star Wars is going to be in a week or two when we launch Dadawan. So look out for that. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with a new Hey You Geeks as well. So until then, I'm Tony Nunes.
And I'm Rick Rebello.
And we'll see you then.
This podcast has been a production of the Geek Dad Podcast Network. If you've enjoyed this content, please consider supporting us at patreon.com/geekdad.